You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA, FanRag Sports, and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports, and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media, on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Be sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. You've got reaction to all of the things that are happening with the Bulls over the last 2 weeks, whether it's Zach LaVine or it's Jabari Parker or anything in between. You want to talk about Summer League, drop us a text or a voicemail at 331-979-1369. We do mailbag every single Wednesday, so we'll make sure and guarantee that you can get your question answered on the show on Wednesday. And if you drop us a voicemail, more than likely we will play that. Matt, welcome back from the weekend. It's good to hear that you've got a pulse still after some of the things that went down this weekend. And the one thing that I'll start off by saying is we chose content on Friday over no content, and I can chalk this up as an L. Like, that's totally fine. I'm cool with doing that. And for the most part, you were a good sport on Twitter this weekend, trying to fight off some of the Bulls fans that
come at me, bro. Come at me, bro. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Here I am. I'm still standing. It was an interesting weekend. But look, I mean, our Friday episode was definitely a fun one, and I don't regret anything that I said on Friday's show. For those coming at me this weekend saying, this person an apology and you were so wrong, and did you actually think that they weren't going to sign? You were so convinced, you were so wrong. Okay, so here's this first of all. Yes, I was wrong. I was wrong because I was convinced that the Bulls would be smart enough to see that Parker signing is just a flat, dumb idea. It's a bad idea, and therefore I thought it didn't happen. It wouldn't happen, rather. Not just the fact that I wanted to give the Bulls front office credit to say, this is probably not the way to go right now, but also because outside of that one random reporter for the Racine Times, who, parentheses, has an awful reputation, and I knew that, basically people in Wisconsin sports fans clown him harder than we clown Joe Cowley. Like, the guy is not a reputable source of information. And I knew that, and that's why I came at him, because nobody else had anything concrete about the Bulls actually being interested in Jabari Parker. Jabari Parker being interested in the Bulls? Yeah, we heard some of that, and we talked about that. But nothing from Woj, nothing from Shams, nothing from Stein, nothing from Casey, nothing from anybody that would suggest the Bulls were actually close to signing Jabari or even talking to Jabari. Until late Friday night, when all of a sudden there's Woj with a Woj bomb. That was the first reputable source that we heard anything about the Bulls actually being interested in signing Jabari. So I'm not sorry for coming at that Wisconsin journalist who has a trash reputation for putting out false reports that turn out to be the furthest from the truth. And I've said this before on the show, and I'll say it a million times. Nothing is done until it's done, and there are sources I trust and sources I don't. I did not trust him as a source, and I didn't trust that the Bulls were actually interested in Jabari. So, yes, readily admit, I was wrong about that one, and I'm surprised that I was wrong. But I'm not sorry for anything I said on Friday's show.
I'm stupid. You're smart. I was wrong. You were right. You're the best. I'm the worst. You're very good looking. I'm not attractive.
The one thing I will say is we recorded midday on Friday, and this was before we heard any of these Woj bombs, or like we were talking about Mark Stein or Shams or anybody that is verified and a trusted source. And none of those guys had this story, which credit to Jerry up in Wisconsin, this reporter who was the only one with the story. And when we were done recording, we recorded the episode, we edited it down, I posted it, and about 45 minutes later, it all turned on its head. And look, we'll take the L for that. That's fine. The one thing that I think people are getting wrong about our take on Friday was we weren't talking about the likelihood that the Bulls would sign Jabari Parker. It's the fit and what made sense. We told you, we don't break news. So we sit here and we discuss and we give our opinions and we give the opinions of Bulls fans. And that conversation, 95, 99% of that conversation was about the fit and why this makes sense or why this doesn't make sense. And I'll say this too. I firmly believe that the Bulls were using this as a negotiation tactic to either make a deal with Denver or to make a deal for Oklahoma City. Like, you talk about the timeline of this rebuild, and you talk about all the moves that they've made post Jimmy Butler. And signing Jabari Parker wasn't one of those things that made sense to me as far as their timeline. And they talked about how they wanted to acquire young assets and use this cap space to maybe get some assets in return for a salary dump. When that was clear that Oklahoma City and Denver made their move with Brooklyn, and then Oklahoma City wanted way too much and wasn't going to give enough back to the Bulls, then you look at the idea that the Bulls are not interested in doing that. They're not interested in a salary dump and acquiring draft picks or young assets from another team in order to quote-unquote waste money. So you take that into a factor, and then now I can sort of believe that they would be in on Jabari Parker. Like, that made me believe now, and that was after we recorded. So I firmly believe, though, when we were recording, that it was just a negotiation tactic to try and squeeze as much as they could out of Oklahoma City, and I really thought that's what they were going to do, because think about their one strength that we've talked about the entire time is historically they've been really good at drafting, and that's where they've built talent. And that's what, if you look around the league and any of these other teams that are really good right now, the Celtics, the Warriors, where did they build their superstar teams? From the draft. So that's what I thought they were doing as far as a blueprint, and I was wrong too.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the phrase that you used a couple times there is collecting young assets. So what we learned on Saturday is that the Bulls front office views Jabari Parker as a young asset because they are in rebuilding talent accumulation mode, and they clearly are focusing on adding high upside potential pieces to try, and they're going to figure out how those pieces fit together later as they're trying to put this puzzle together, because that's what I was harping on Friday's show. And any time we ever talked about Jabari is that he just doesn't fit with this Bulls roster right now from an X's and O's standpoint and where he's going to play on the floor, because the Bulls are loaded at power forward, which is his most natural position. And those of you who want to interject and butt into my statement just now to say, oh, he's actually a more natural three, you're wrong. You're just wrong. So stop. That's why. And so to me, this is a signal that the Bulls, let's not gloss over the fact that this is about selling tickets and selling jerseys, because it absolutely is. He's a name. He's a Chicago name. And Bulls fans who just want a name and want this team to get back to the playoffs and believe that this will make that happen are going to go out and spend money on Jabari Parker stuff and Bulls tickets. That's part of it. But the other part is the Bulls actually see him as a guy with potential upside to still turn into some kind of all-star player. And they don't care about the fit right now. They're just in gathering as many potential good quality young players as they can, and then they'll worry about how they fit together later. That's what this sounds like to me.
Yeah, so diving into the actual contract and whether or not he fits on this Bulls team, what this Bulls team's even going to look like when we tip off next season. 2 years, $40 million, obviously $20 million per year with a second-year team option on that, which makes me feel a lot more comfortable about this deal. I don't know about you, Matt. And like I had said before in my previous statement, is understanding that the Bulls are not in on taking on salary dumps and don't want to acquire draft picks, because that's what this move tells me, is that they had an opportunity to deal with Denver, and I thought they could have, for a draft pick, or with Oklahoma City. That's clearly what they don't want to do that. And fine, if that's clearly what you don't want to do, then I look at this deal and say that $20 million that was going to be free in cap space for quote-unquote future deals to come up, I'm glad that they didn't just leave that money there and try to sell fans on whether or not they were actually going to make a deal throughout the season for salary dumps and to acquire draft picks, because I firmly don't believe that the Bulls wanted to take that path. And some people believe that that's the right path to take, and that's how you build a future team in the current NBA state. Brooklyn's doing that right now, and their blueprint for trying to rebuild a team and rebuild on the fly is exactly what you want to do. And the Bulls took a different route. They're going to try it on young guys that they feel like they can use as a flex. And we'll see what happens with Parker, man. I told you multiple times, I don't think it's going to be a good idea playing him and LaVine next to each other at the two and the three.
It's going to be a disaster.
But even that, like, I have to go the opposite way too and say, what if it works? What if it does work? What if Parker is fully healthy next season? And what if LaVine's fully healthy next season? And the one thing that I want to point out too, Matt, and before we go to a break, is nobody on this show, and I don't think you or I, and maybe I'll speak for myself here, nobody's questioning his offensive ability. Jabari Parker is a scorer. That's what he was drafted for. He's a scorer. And to me, if he can come out and stay healthy and consistently score on a night-in, night-out basis, he's going to have some value for the Bulls. My biggest question mark is how he plays defense alongside LaVine, and how does that knee hold up? How does that ACL hold up after two tears and trying to play position at a more athletic position than maybe the four is? And I'm curious how that's going to work out, and how him and LaVine next to each other, and whether or not Lauri Markkanen has improved on his defense as well, because let's be honest, in his rookie year, he was average. He was an average defender, and he was more of a scorer too. So the scoring, I don't have a problem with. The offense is going to be there. I firmly believe that. I just have big question marks on whether or not the defense is going to shake out, and if that effort is going to be there on that side from not only Jabari Parker, but from Zach LaVine, and whether or not Lauri Markkanen takes another step in defense.
I mean, to me, it's not a question. I know right now, as things stand today, LaVine and Parker playing defense next to each other at the two and the three is going to be an unmitigated disaster. That's just a fact. You're not wrong that Parker is offensively talented. I will absolutely admit that. The kid can score. I do have some concerns about how he fits in to Fred's offense, because basically this young Bulls core, with all the potential LaVine or Markkanen has, and really liking what we've seen so far from Wendell Carter Jr. and looking forward to those two playing together in the front court, This Bulls team, what they lacked last year was a guy that could just go and get them a bucket. And Zach LaVine is kind of supposed to be that guy, right? He's the guy who can just go ISO and score you a bucket if you need one. So to me, that's why adding Parker was sort of unnecessary. And for the Bulls fans, and you mentioned this too, obviously it's a good thing that it's a team option in year two. If they guaranteed him 2 years, I would be losing my friggin' mind, because that would just be so incredibly stupid. Yes, it's good that it's a team option for year two, and those of you who are rationalizing this by saying, well, if it doesn't work out and he doesn't look good, then they could just walk away. Okay, great. So you wasted, in this one season when you bring in Parker, how many offensive possessions and looks for Lauri Markkanen, who you really want to build this team around? How much development for Wendell Carter Jr. and his offensive versatility, because you had to give Jabari Parker some ISO possessions offensively? To me, that is the big thing that I'm really struggling with right now. I don't like that at all.
And when we come back from break, I want to touch on that, Matt, because you bring up a couple interesting points, and it's points that Bulls fans are making, and I think you should be able to look at both sides of it. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're going to continue to talk about this story, this development, and the signing of the Bulls with Jabari Parker, and also want to touch on just how it's going to look on the floor and some of the ways it could be positive and some of the ways it could be negative. And also, we're going to get your reaction at the end of the show. We're going to run through all the text messages and the reaction we got on Friday and Saturday nights from this signing, whether Bulls fans like this signing or they don't. So we'll take all your reaction and more. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, and what we were discussing before is Jabari Parker and what could possibly happen with him on the floor, positively and negatively. And you brought up a point before break. You brought up the point is you don't want to take production away from Lauri Markkanen, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And to me, that remark by Bulls fans, I think, is something that you got to relay that to Fred Hoiberg. That's on Fred Hoiberg. If he doesn't find a way to continue to get Lauri Markkanen shots and tell his guys that, like, this is the guy you need to feed and this is who needs the ball and this is the way that we're going to capitalize on his offensive ability, that's on Fred Hoiberg, man. And look, it's tough for him too. The front office put him in a weird position. Parker, as far as Fred Hoiberg's system goes and the way he wants to play, Parker doesn't really fit that. So Fred Hoiberg's going to have to find a way to play and still be able to get production out of Lauri Markkanen as far as the offense goes, find ways to be productive with Carter as well, and same thing with Parker and Levine. I think it's going to be interesting, and I think there's a lot of pressure on Fred Hoiberg right now, and you could even say that this is an opportunity for Fred Hoiberg to present one of the biggest challenges. I think he's going into his, fourth year as the Bulls head coach. This is another really big challenge, and different from having to combat Jimmy Butler on the team and different from having to take all these young guys and figure it out in the first year of rebuild. I think this is going to be a huge stepping stone, not only for the young players in Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., and now you throw Jabari Parker in the mix. But this is a huge year for Fred Hoiberg, and I think it's on Fred Hoiberg more so than anybody else. If you see a lack of production or a dip in production from Lauri Markkanen's offense from last year to this year, and look, he shot 46.3% of his shots from the three-point arc last season. I don't need Lauri Markkanen taking that many threes next year. And hey, if he can do it at a high clip, that's fine. But I'd like to see him work his post game too. I think his post game is underrated, and his ability to drive to the basket is also underrated. So if you're asking me, I'm not too concerned about it. I don't need Markkanen taking almost 50% of his shots just from the arc. And we'll see. We'll find out if Fred Hoiberg's got it in him to be able to find a way to get all of these guys' touches.
Well, yeah. I mean, you mentioned just now the way that Markkanen's shot selection panned out last year, 12.7 field goal attempts per game, 5.9 of those coming from behind the three-point line. I don't disagree with your take that you think that Markkanen's got a strong post game. I just look at his rookie season and say we didn't see enough of it. Like, we didn't get enough of a sample size of Markkanen working in the post because the Bulls just didn't do it that much. And part of that was certain Bulls point guards having trouble getting their entry passes to Markkanen or just flat out ignoring him in the case of Zach LaVine when LaVine was the ball dominant player. So I want to see potential in Markkanen's post-up game, but based on his rookie season, I just don't know about that right now. But what I do know is that his 12.7 field goal attempts total last season as a rookie, I don't want that to go down in his second year. Bet your ass I don't want that to go down. I want to see that at like 15. So you add Parker to the mix, another player who needs the ball to score, and those of you optimistic about his fit at the three because he can't actually space the floor based on his increase in three-point attempts and three-point makes last season and his best season in the NBA, his 16-17 season. Okay, well, like, we'll see if that translates when he's in a Bulls uniform. You can't be positive of that. But either way, behind the three-point line or going to work, wherever he operates on the floor, Parker's taking shots away from Markkanen. And as a piece that I don't think really fits right now, and as high as I am on Markkanen, I just don't like that. I do not like that. And you are right to say this is on Fred Hoiberg. And if this experiment fails, and whether that is Parker not panning out or Markkanen taking a step back in his second year or LaVine looking like a guy that they shouldn't have paid 20 mil per over a four-year deal because he doesn't take a step up from his pedestrian season last year, Hoiberg could end up being the fall guy for this front office. It's a gross reality because a lot of people among this fan base think that this front office should have been fired years ago. But if this season doesn't work, you could see Hoiberg being the one to get the axe because he couldn't figure out the way to make these pieces work together on the court.
I think he's still got 2 years. Like, I think you and I probably feel comfortable with saying that even if next year turns out to be, what, a 35-win team, and there are some question marks about this team next year, I still think he's going to be here for his last season, and he's going to live out this full five-year contract before they actually decide. And look, that would have to be worst-case scenario, right? And I still, like, people who say that they don't believe in Fred Hoiberg still, like, I told you last year, and I've said it and kept the same energy the entire season, saying that I felt like this was year one of what Fred Hoiberg could really show us and show us how he can build a modern NBA team. I thought the first 2 years he was here, it was a little bit unfair. Like, he was thrown into the mix, learning how to be an NBA coach, and then you had to deal with not only Butler being a superstar and dealing with that personality, but then they brought in Rondo and Wade, too. So I think in that second year, it was difficult for him to handle. And that's to me, is his one biggest weakness, and I don't think it's even really something you have to consider until we get to that stage, and is how he deals with superstars. But we're not even at that point yet. So I think Fred Hoiberg is a good coach, and I think he's a good coach offensively, too. And that's what the Bulls want to do here, and they've got a lot of offensive talent here. So to me, I think that has to be absolute worst-case scenario next season. Everything has to just be absolutely lit on fire for me to believe that Fred Hoiberg would be out. And the one thing about his coaching ability and some of the things that I don't take as underrated comments is, think about last season when the Bulls played Golden State, when the Bulls played Boston, multiple times Steve Kerr and Brad Stevens were asked about Fred Hoiberg and what they feel about him as a coach. And they said they were taking plays and taking sets and the offensive schemes that he was running, they were basing some of their plays off of that too. And Steve Kerr had high regards for Fred Hoiberg, and so did Brad Stevens. So I don't think those comments should go underwhelmed either. So to me, I think Fred Hoiberg's going to find a way to get the best out of all of these players. And my question mark still just goes back to the biggest thing we talked about with LaVine and Parker together is, can these guys learn how to play defense? Can they switch? Can they learn how to play help defense? Are you going to be relying on Chris Dunn and Wendell Carter Jr. and Robin Lopez to be doing a lot of the switching and carrying the brute part of that defense? And that's a tall task for both of those guys to ask for. So hopefully there's a little bit of a balance in between those two. But I still believe in Fred Hoiberg as a coach. I know there's a lot of Bulls fans that don't. But just what I saw last season, what he was able to do with that garbage roster. And think about it. Markkanen, Dunn, and LaVine only played 12 games together, and they still won 27 games. So to me,
you say still won 27 games as if 27 games is impressive.
Their Las Vegas projection was 21 wins last season. They won 27.
Okay.
And that's taking Nico off the team. Should they have left Nico on that team, they would have won more games.
Well,
Should LaVine or Dunn have not gotten hurt, they would have won more games.
They won some of those games late in the season against teams that were tanking more successfully. Let's also remember that.
That's true. But they also went on a, what, 3-20 start to start the season?
Yeah, they started 3-20 and then followed it with that 7-game winning streak and like a stretch where they, you know, won 12.
15-7 since Nico returned.
Yeah. There you go. So, I mean, I'm not discrediting Hoiberg as an offensive-minded coach. I certainly think that's where his strength is as a basketball coach. And to me, the biggest concern of all of them, and you know, we haven't even really talked about the fact that Parker has, at age 23, already had two torn ACLs, which, I mean, come on. If you're not worried about that, you're crazy. Is the fact that defensively, it's going to be a nightmare. Fred Hoiberg is not a great defensive coach. Now, you can just remove the adjective great from that sentence and it still holds true. Fred Hoiberg is not a defensive coach. So somebody on his staff better hope that they can figure out some way to mask the defensive deficiencies of two players who not only do not have the skills on the defensive end, but have a reputation, at least thus far in their young careers, to have a low work rate on the defensive end and just give up on plays and get lost. and don't know how to deal with switches and are lazy and get caught ball watching and all of these things. And they're playing next to each other at the two and the three, where they're going to have to deal with some of the most dangerous scorers in the league right now. You can talk all you want about how you believe in Fred Hoiberg as a guy who could draw up plays and play this free flow offensive stylistically and great. But there are still major concerns about what this team is going to look like defensively. And those of you who don't believe that defense is important in this league, it's true that offense is more important than defense, but both are important. And the Bulls right now project to be the starting five projects to be a pretty ugly scenario on the defensive end. And I don't know if Hoiberg could do anything about that.
If this ends up working, say early on in the season, and there doesn't have to be major changes to who starts and who are the guys that are being successful, I think if this works, then you find yourself in a pretty good position for Hoiberg to find max potential from this offense. I think the one thing, and maybe one of Fred Hoiberg's biggest weaknesses, and I think we all can agree on this, is, and I don't know if this is whether or not Fred Hoiberg's choosing to do this, or if over the last couple of years, the guys from the front office have spoken to Fred about who they want to play and who they don't. But I think his rotations, I think, are his biggest weakness. And spending too time or being too quick to pull a guy or giving a guy too many minutes and too much opportunity, I think we saw that at times last year when we were confused, like, why are some of these guys getting minutes over other guys? Why aren't you sitting players? Like, I think that was my biggest heart for him when the Bulls were pretty competitive back in 2016-2017. His rotations at times were very confusing. He sat Rondo at a stretch. He sat Nico at a stretch when they were making a playoff run. So I look at that, and then I look at last year in the rebuild too, and asking myself, why are some of these guys not getting minutes over others? If you're really trying to develop and see what you have in your player development, why is Justin Holiday still getting 25 minutes a game? Why is Robin Lopez still out there for 28 minutes a game? So that would be the biggest weakness, and I think that will be even more under a microscope should this thing not work, especially early on next season.
Well, I mean, there's some truth to that, but after voicing my skepticism about Hoiberg, I'll come to his defense now to say that maybe there are some issues with his rotations and how he works with that as part of his job as the coach, but it's not like he's exactly had it easy in that department in his tenure as a head coach with the Bulls.
Absolutely. I mean, you're not
even
wrong.
Even tossing aside his first year where, like, Rose was still here and Joakim was still here, and even that season, like, the weird stuff with, like, deciding to split Joakim and Powell and benching Joakim, like, that was weird, but not necessarily entirely his fault. I mean, the way he handled it was his fault. But then in year two, midway through the season, the Bulls trade away Taj and Doug, two of his top six guys, and get in return this garbage kid campaign who nobody believes can play and has a broken foot. And they're like, put this guy in your rotation, Fred. And Fred's like, okay. And did so for 10 games. It was like, this kid can't play. And the Bulls are trying to make the playoffs simultaneously. I can't really knock Fred for following orders there when the front office was clearly like, we just traded for this guy, you should play him. When clearly playing him made no sense for what they were trying to accomplish. And then last season, are they tanking? Are they not tanking? They got a warning from the league. They got to stop tanking. Okay, we can tank again. Again, mid-season trades, trying to juggle various people in various spots on the floor. Like, some of that is Fred and maybe not being great with rotations, and some of that is just like the Bulls front office putting Fred in a really uncomfortable situation.
You're not wrong, and you bring up some pretty good points, and I think those that come to bat for Fred Hoiberg over the last couple of seasons will bring up those points. I think this year especially, it's up to Fred Hoiberg. Like, the Bulls front office, to me, they're looking at this and saying, all right, we gave you enough young talent to try and figure out who's going to fit for the future. So now this is on you as a coach to try and maximize all their potential. And that's the most difficult part. And that's what he's getting paid for. So I can see it from both sides. And I'm with you. And like I said, I still think Fred Hoiberg can be a good coach. Now, whether or not he can do it with the players currently constructed on this roster, we'll find out this year. It's not only a big big year for the guys on the floor for in terms of their development, but it's also a huge year for Fred Hoiberg and his development, whether or not he can solidify himself as a true NBA coach, or if the Bulls are going to have to look elsewhere after next season or beyond that, the following season when his contract is coming up. All interesting questions. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, Matt, I'm going to try to convince you that this move isn't terrible, that I actually like this move in some ways, and in others that I feel like there's going to be some positive stuff coming from this move, other than just he's going to play out of position and this could turn into a disaster. So I'm going to try to give you guys some positive vibes, as well as those Bulls fans out there that might not like this deal right now. So stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
Back here on Locked On Bulls, before we get to your reaction, and you can always leave us your reaction on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, or at Bulls_Peck, or hit us up text messages and voicemails at 331-979-1369. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to make it a part of our Wednesday mailbag, we'll be doing that on Wednesday, so hit us up before then. If you've got any reaction or you want to leave us a voicemail. Matt, I told you before break, I wanted to try and convince you of some of the positive things that I saw from Jabari Parker and maybe why the Bulls front office feels like this could be a potential good fit, and maybe for long term. I've got a couple different things, and I want to start with this. I went back and watched Jabari Parker play in the playoffs. And do you remember game 3 and game 4 and when he went for 17 points and 16 points coming off the bench? I look at those highlights, and I posted a few on my Twitter feed of him sampling a bunch of different things on offense, and that's what gets me excited to watch him next year. Outside the contract and the fits and everything else, just looking at his game and the injury too, just looking at his game and maybe what he could bring night in, night out, the offense, it's hard to deny. Like, the guy can go ISO. He's got great handles. He can pass the ball. He can shoot threes. I watched a little bit of everything he did in that playoff game. And on the road, coming off the bench against one of the best teams in the NBA as far as defense goes, the best team in the Boston Celtics last year, He cooked Jaylen Brown at the three last year in the playoffs. And like I said, it's only one or two game sample, but he showed a little bit of everything. And when that confidence is back there, and maybe it starts with this new start in Chicago, and maybe if the confidence is there, we'll see something that maybe we didn't get to see before with the Bucks. And I know the ACL is a huge factor, and that's why I go back to saying, if he can be healthy and he can be an offensive force night in and night out, and he can do those two things, I think he's going to have value, whether that is in a future lineup with this Bulls team, or even if the fact that they decide to bring him back again, or they trade him. Like, that's still on the table too. They can find value and move him, and they find a superstar that's ready to get moved right away. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility either.
Just, you talk about trading. What are we talking about, Jordan? Trading Jabari, so they're going to sign him just to trade him.
I'm talking about future deals. Like, go back to what...
So if he performs well this season and they either pick up his option for year two or renegotiate and sign him to a multi-year deal in the summer of 2019 and then trade him down the road from there, that's what you're saying.
Yes, I'm talking about, like, say the Bulls fans that are pipe dreaming right now, 2 or 3 years.
Anthony Davis!
Like, he would be an important piece around a trade should he stay healthy and should he play well. That's a lot of ifs, I know, but I'm telling you, I'm looking at 2 or 3 years down the road.
I mean, it's only two ifs, but they are two very big fat ifs. And that's the majority of why I don't feel comfortable with this right now. If he plays well, his best season on record is... Yeah, okay, yeah, he averaged 20 points and 6 rebounds in a season where he played, what, 50 games? 51 games? Cool. Good for you. To me, that doesn't equate to the 20 mil contract that he just signed. And the other big fat if of the knee. Two tears in the same knee. I mean, we were just talking about the risk of signing LaVine. And yes, in LaVine's case, it was a 4-year deal. And you're giving him a lot of money, and he's coming off an ACL. Jabari Parker has two. Like, I'm sorry, but to me, that's not just a coincidence. That's a guy who is injury prone. If you have torn your ACL twice before you're 24, it's just a giant red flag to me. And how many teams around the league, even if Parker is playing well, can look at that injury history and say they feel comfortable giving up healthy assets that they have or future first-round draft pick assets that they have to take on that guy who has two torn ACLs? That's all I'm saying.
And that's a good argument to have, and I understand that. But and looking at the very positive upside of this that could happen, and if a deal is surrounded around a guy like Parker, and should he not come back, then maybe a deal down the road would possibly include LaVine. Like, you can look at both of those guys and find value in different ways. Like, those contracts still can be traded. Should a deal arise for a superstar that comes out of nowhere? And, like, Gar Forman and John Paxson have said this both times, is you look at what the Rockets did. They didn't play this through the draft. They sort of built it on a win on the fly. Let's try to rebuild on the fly, be in position with cap space and players that should a superstar want out of a place or need to be traded, will have the opportunity to do that. And they did that with James Harden. They had the assets. Very few teams did in order to acquire him. They had the cap space to do that. So there are multiple ways to go about this rebuild and to look at where you could get value and where you can get superstars. Matt, another reason here is I think this move in general is the Bulls hedging their bet on saying, you know what, we're taking a real reality check at ourselves and saying we haven't been successful in 2019. In 2020, where we're looking at big free agents, we haven't been successful in the past signing superstar free agents to commit them to come here. So I feel like that second year option in 2019, should they be out on a lot of these superstars and feel like they have no chance, this is them hedging their bet and saying at least we'll be able to bring this guy back for another year and have the potential of him turning out to be a decent player. And so to talk about the negatives, yeah, I think you also have to talk about the positives here.
Okay, fine. You can talk about the positives. But what you were just saying about the Bulls hedging their bets in case they whiff on free agents in 2019, see, to me, that's the other big worry, is that, okay, cool. Everybody who's saying it's only a two-year deal with a second-year team option, they can walk away if they don't like it. Think about this Bulls front office and think about the history of whiffing on big-name free agents. And let's just play with that hypothetical right now. Fast forward a year. Jabari Parker had an okay season his first year in Chicago. Picked up his scoring a little bit. Wasn't the most effective player. Definitely was a really bad glaring weakness on the defensive end, and he does not pair well with LaVine in the two and the three spots on that side of the court. Has an okay season, not a great season, not a terrible season. And the Bulls just paid him $20 million, and they have options in front of them, which include let him go, pay him $20 million again, or renegotiate and sign him to a multi-year deal. If they're hedging their bets, and they, after a so-so season from Parker, take a look at the free agent market and say, we don't think we can get any of these guys to come play here. Kyrie's not coming here. Klay Thompson's not coming here. Kawhi's not coming here. Jimmy's not coming back here. So instead, let's overpay Jabari Parker and just continue to insist that he is an integral part of this rebuild when really you're making that decision based off of very little from what, in this hypothetical, I'm saying is a so-so season from Jabari Parker, which I think is the most reasonable prediction to make right now. And then Bulls fans have to ask them the question of if they have faith in the front office to make the right decision there. Just like everybody is questioning whether or not they made the right decision to match the offer for Zach LaVine.
Can I tell you one common theme that I'm getting from all of this? Over the last few weeks, just, you know, with the LaVine signing and not bringing David Nwaba back and signing Jabari Parker instead, the one common theme that I think I keep coming back to is there isn't a clear direction for year two, year three, or year four. I think we had a clear direction, clear defined direction for year one of the rebuild. And for the most part, they did well. I thought the rebuild went well for the most part. You can talk about them not...
Right, except them not getting a top three pick, but hey...
Yeah, that would be the only knock. That would be the biggest knock I think I would have on it. The other thing is that Marketing, Dunn, and LaVine didn't stay healthy and could only play 12 games together. That I can't really discredit the front office for. That was just weird circumstance. But for the most part, I've said it multiple times, since the Jimmy Butler trade, I think the front office has made a lot of really good moves. And to me, the one thing that I liked and I felt was transparent was telling us exactly what the Bulls were going to do and the direction that they wanted to go for 1 year. And I thought that was consistent for an entire year. Now I'm falling into the camp of, I don't know where this rebuild is going. And I don't know exactly if the Bulls know what their direction is for this team. You talk about the East opening up now and them maybe feeling like they can be more competitive. And that's the route that they wanted to go. And mediocrity is something that I don't even want to entertain. And I don't think the Bulls are going to be terrible and be back in the lottery. And I also don't think they're going to be one of the top five teams in this East. And so even if you want to look past next year and you look 2-3 years down the road, I still don't think they have really an idea of what the direction is for this team 2-3-4 years down the road. And that's what I get back to understanding. How can this turn out to be good if you don't have a long-term goal? And if the long-term goal is only to make the playoffs and be somewhat competitive in this East, but not really have a shot at going back to the NBA Finals, then what's the point of this? So that's where I am from a fan's standpoint. Like, the fans that still want the Bulls to make the playoffs, I want them to get back to the NBA Finals. I want them to be a consistent team for 5, 6, 7 years down the road and have a clear path of how you want to do that. And I think the Bulls bouncing ideas of trading and grabbing salary dumps for draft assets, telling us that they feel like building through the draft is the way to do this rebuild, and then turning it around on its head and signing Zach LaVine for a bunch of money and signing Jabari Parker for a short term, but a lot of money. I think that kind of is a little bit hypocritical from what they've said and what they actually want to do. So that it just goes back to my main point.
Right. And
I don't think there's really a direction.
And that's why I was so pissed off about this Jabari stuff and didn't want to believe that it was true, because it was a total revert backwards to this is such a classic Bulls front office move, because it doesn't really make a lot of logical sense from a basketball standpoint. But it is predictable in so many ways. It's predictable because they're bringing a big-name guy who has a Chicago background, who's going to make a splash in merch sales and ticket sales. It's predictable because he's a Duke guy, and they're obsessed with Duke players. It's predictable because he's a Mark Bartlestein client, and that relationship with that agency and the Bulls front office has never been stronger than it is right now, and it has existed for a very long time. For all of those reasons, it's predictable, and as you said, it is the Bulls saying, all right, here's what we're going to do, and then doing the opposite. That's why it's just so frustrating to me. Between that and my amount of skepticism with Jabari actually fitting into this team, and I don't think you're wrong saying all of a sudden in year two of the rebuild, the quote-unquote direction is a little murkier than it was before. Because I wanted year two to be about, hopefully LaVine proves himself worthy of that contract, shows himself to be a dominant offensive scorer, and you hide his defensive weaknesses. Chris Dunn has a healthy season and looks to be a guy who improves offensively and is on his way to being one of the better elite defensive guards in the league. Markkanen takes a big step in year two, and Wendell Carter Jr. at some point takes over for Robin Lopez, who maybe gets traded, assumes the starting center spot, and there are already signs of Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. playing very well and effectively together. And Wendell Carter Jr. at 19 looks like an NBA-ready guy. And then the Bulls' remaining piece that they need to figure out is a great 3-and-D wing. And, you know, it's not like anybody would believe that that's Chandler Hutchison right now. We'll see what we get from him out of his rookie year. But to me, that was the direction and vision coming into the second year of the rebuild. Build Markkanen, see what you got in Wendell, which looks to be a pretty darn good draft pick. See improvement from Chris Dunn, see commitment and improvement from Zach LaVine, and then you are the starting 3-and-D wing piece away from actually maybe being a contender in a year or two, at least in the East. But right now, with this Jabari signing, it's such a classic Bulls move of like, all right, well, Paxson said they didn't want to tank anymore. They were done with that. They were only going to do that for 1 year. We signed Jabari. We put together a roster that might be good enough to be the 7th or 8th seed. We'll get bounced in the first round, but hey, we'll sell some playoff tickets and we'll sell some Jabari jerseys. And hey, look, the Bulls are relevant again. And it's like, okay, you tore down the Jimmy Butler Bulls because you were sick of mediocrity, and we are right back on our way to mediocrity if they just think that this random accumulation and throwing Jabari in there is actually going to be competitive.
And look, I'm not ready to go to that extreme as far as saying that they're going to be mediocre again. I still believe in the talent, and I will say one thing. if I had to choose whether or not I had to watch Justin Holliday start at the three next season, or Denzel Valentine, or whoever, if they were going to throw Chandler Hutchison out there night one, like, whatever it is, I think I, as a Bulls fan, as in a basketball fan too, I would rather see Parker out there and get the minutes and watch that. To me, that's more of an entertainment value than anything else. But you take that and you look at that, and I still go back to what I said before and earlier on in this episode. The fact that I am convinced now that the Bulls do not want to take on salary dumps and to take on future assets to build through the draft the way that they've said, they don't want to take on extra stuff and quote-unquote waste money. They felt like putting the money into Parker, who's actually going to be able to go out there and play, and it's not something that they're going to have to wait on. I'm not completely mad about it anymore. Like, I'm not even really that mad. Like, I don't see this going well, and I hope I'm wrong, and I really hope so. And I hope Parker plays well this season, and him and LaVine can figure things out, and that the offense looks incredible. That's the positive view of it, but I don't see this going well. Matt, I want to throw this at our listeners and at you too. This is from Dan Falva. He says, Bucks net rating with Jabari Parker at the three per Cleaning Glass in 2014 and 2015, 244 possessions. The Bucks as a whole was a minus 9.4 rating. 2015-16 with 404 possessions, a negative 29.7 rating. 2016-2017, 1,052 possessions, a negative 2.8 rating. And then last season, with only 24 possessions, was a negative 16.7. That was Parker playing the three. Here's Parker playing the four for the Bucks over his career so far. Net rating, 2014-2015, negative 6.1. 2015-2016, negative 1.4. 2016-2017, negative 2.6. 2017-2018, negative 3.7. So what that sample says to me is, yeah, he's not a great defender overall, and he doesn't make their team better as a whole when he's on the floor at the four, but he's far better at the four than he was at the three. And look, I know it's a different system, and there's different players here, and things could happen, but I just go back to thinking about Giannis playing all five positions and having one of the best two-way players in the game playing alongside you makes me believe that it only makes Parker better on the defensive end, or as a whole on a team. So when he's coming here and you don't have Giannis anymore, I have some question marks. Like, is that going to translate? Is he going to take a step forward? Like, those are all big question marks. And I think you can't deny the data when it says he's not very good on defense, and he's very ineffective for a team as a whole when he plays at the three. That's just what the stats and the production in his past four seasons have told us so far. So I think, looking at the positives, you have to also look at the negatives and what the numbers say already. If you did that for Zach LaVine, you have to do that for Parker now.
It seems like you are trying to talk yourself into this Parker signing being a good idea.
I am. Man, I've talked myself into it, I think, all weekend.
You've said, you got to look at the positive, you got to look at the negatives too. And you also have said, well, if you got to look at the negatives, you got to look at the positives. So, I mean, basically, I just have, obviously, we all know how I feel at this point. We don't need to go over it a million times. As you said, I hope I'm wrong. I hope Parker turns out to be a great fit. I hope he actually proves to us that he can play the three. And the fact that he was playing the bulk of his minutes at the four in Milwaukee was just some weird anomaly. And Milwaukee didn't know what they were doing. And maybe Parker gets in better shape, sheds a little weight, and proves that he can play something closely resembling defense of any kind at the three position next to a bad defensive Zach LaVine at the two. And it's not a disaster for the Bulls. And that he stays healthy and has a great... I hope that I am wrong, and all of those things happen. But it is hard not to be skeptical, and it's also hard not to be bitter, because, as I've said, as someone who's actually been playing devil's advocate for this Bulls front office recently, just because the Garpacks haters refuse to give them any credit, even when they make a move that is logically a good one, and I'm getting sick of that, this just reverts back to the kind of classic Bulls front office move that I shake my head at, because it makes no sense on the basketball court. That's why I'm just so frustrated about this, because I wanted to believe in them actually putting this back on course and correcting some of their previous mistakes. And with this, I am so skeptical, and I am not a believer, and I hope I'm wrong.
Two things I've got to keep with the same energy that I've had in the past few weeks. The one thing I said when defending the Zach LaVine contract was that it ultimately was a no-brainer move for me. It was, you had to bring back a young asset. To lose him, I think, would be kind of ridiculous. And the money that was being paid out there at $19.5 million, I defended that. I said, I really don't think it's going to be all that bad. A lot of Bulls fans think that it might be. And I said, you know, it still set you up for good cap space and availability in 2019-2020. And you're taking a chance on a guy that's still only 23 years old. So if I'm saying that about LaVine, I feel like I have to keep the same energy for Jabari Parker. And if the Bulls, in, I go back to it, it's a short-term deal, and I know everybody's doing that too. But to me, that's huge. Like, 1 year tryout for Jabari Parker, they used the money in a way that maybe wasn't my first choice, but it's clear that that's the way that they don't want to go. So fine, they went with their backup plan in Jabari Parker. I'm fine on a 1 year tryout for $20 million because let's be honest here. If we would have gone into the season with cap space available, I highly doubt that the Bulls would have used that to take on a salary dump. Where in the past history has it told us that the Bulls are willing to make that kind of move? It just doesn't. So to me, I'm glad that they used the cap space, and them getting called cheap for selling picks, it's turned on its head. And while it's not the player you wanted to pay a ton of money to, they spent the money and they're showing that they're willing to invest in young assets. And now those young assets come with some baggage. They come with two ACL tears and Zach LaVine and one ACL tear. But I was adamant about them saying, you know what, fine, we're going to commit to Zach LaVine with a lot of money and we still keep our flexibility open. They've done the same thing with Parker. 2019, if it doesn't work out between the Bulls and Parker and he gets re-hurt, something happens, his production just isn't there and they don't see the fit, they can walk away from it. And that's the biggest part. And they'll still have $36 million in relative cap space. And that's just ballparking it right now. About $36 million next year to sign a max free agent and hedging their bets on 2019 and 2020. I'm still a believer that the front office doesn't believe 100% that they can get a superstar to come here in either of those years.
I think they're looking more closely at 2020 than 2019. I think they're realistic, or maybe hopefully they're realistic about the unlikelihood of them getting any of those guys that I mentioned who are the 2019 free agents. And Anthony Davis lurking out there, not in 1 year, but in two. If signing Jabari is a part of some larger plan they have to get Anthony Davis and somehow correlate that, come play with this other Chicago native who's had a bounce back and a career resurgence here in Chicago, and this young core we have, then, you know, figure out what you're going to do as far as balancing Anthony Davis, Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. Maybe you give up one of those pieces to get Anthony Davis or whatever, however it may go down. I'll forgive the Bulls front office for everything negative I've said about them just now with this Jabari move. That is their big long-term plan, and they actually pull it off and execute it. But that's why I think 2019, they're already saying, it's probably not likely that we're going to get any of those guys. So we'll bring here's Jabari. Here's Jabari, Bulls fans, from Chicago. Go buy tickets and Jabari jersey. Actually, Jordan, so before we get out of here, the most important question, who gets introduced last in the Bulls' home starting lineups? Is it Jabari from Chicago getting introduced as the final guy?
I would assume it's still Lowry, right?
It freaking better be.
I would assume that, like, no matter any of these signings this year, like,
Lowry didn't just sign a 4-year, $80 million deal. Isn't getting paid $20 million next season.
Let's not get it twisted, though. Like, this is Lowry Markkanen's team.
And yeah, and I see it that way. I don't know how many Bulls fans see it that way. And money talks, man.
I think for a fact, maybe it'll be Parker. Like, just because he can do the whole Chicago from Simeon High School and Duke University 6'8", Jabari Parker. Like, maybe that is their last intro for the starters. But, like, if we're talking about, like, sensical things, like, Lowry Markkanen should be the last guy introduced because he is the man. He's ultimately our one cornerstone that I can truly believe in right now as far as how this future of this Bulls team is going to go. And I know you and I agree about that. Most Bulls fans do. And I think the front office agrees about that. You know, that considering everything that they've said about Markkanen, like, he's the cornerstone guy of the future. So if we're talking about a guy that should be introduced last, should definitely be Markkanen.
I'm with you. But I don't know if that's how it's going to play out. I could just totally see the Bulls just, all right, Jabari, you get the From Chicago announcement and you're introduced last because, hey, it's the same thing with Dwayne Wade, man. Dwayne freaking Wade. Ugh.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. There's so much more to talk about. We'll get into that tomorrow's episode. Take your reaction as well. We didn't get to that today's episode, but I promise we'll get to all the text messages, the reaction over the weekend of what Bulls fans feel like. And the one thing that I want to point out before we get out of here, we put up a poll of whether or not Bulls fans like this on Twitter, and it got nearly 1,000 votes. 74% of Bulls fans like the Jabari Parker signing. So if Bulls fans have spoken in a small capacity, 1,000 votes, 74% of Bulls fans out there have spoken and said they like the deal. So we'll find out. We'll find out. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. You can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. If you want to give us your reaction from this Parker signing, if you want to ask us a question, you want to be a part of Wednesday's mailbag, drop us a voicemail or a text message. Once again, 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out of here. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.